If you don't know the story of Jacob Morgan or some of the stories he tells in his books, he talks about how we are changing work, how leaders need to be trained to impact some of these changes. I highly recommend giving him a look. In fact, his Great Leadership podcast would likely be of interest to this particular audience. I first got to know Jacob Morgan's work in 2014 when I read The Future of Work, which is about how to attract new talent, how to find and build better leaders, how to create competitive organizations in a very changed landscape. In that book, Jacob Morgan describes how things that hiring managers seek today is fundamentally changed from the things that we sought before. The old list, the things that employers wanted roughly from the 1950s until somewhere around 2005, were pretty unchanging. People wanted employees that could communicate effectively. They wanted people who had a good work ethic. They wanted people who could work in teams. But around 2005 or so, that list started to fundamentally change, and it has seen significant fluctuations ever since. One of the things that employers seek today that's different from those earlier lists, though, is the embracement of change. Note, it seems that employers who really get ahead find people who love change. It's not just a tolerance for it, but people who seek it out. If you look at sector surveys of change appreciation versus change aversion, you can really start to see this play out. Take a walk down the sidewalk of the campuses of Google or Microsoft or Apple. Stop any employee and say, hey, are you excited about that new thing that's about to drop? Whether it's a service or a product, are you excited about that? And you will likely hear exuberance. They'll say stuff like, oh, it's going to be life-changing, or it will give us capabilities we don't even understand yet. And this really aligns with sector surveys that show technology has some of the most risk-desirous employees in the workforce. So what's on the other side of that continuum? Well, if you walk down the sidewalk of a college or a university and you walk up to somebody who's on that sidewalk and you just say, hey, I just found out that you're going to change from learning management system 8.1 to 8.2. Are you excited about that change? And you will hear things like, oh, for the love of God, no. I just figured out where the buttons are. Please don't move anything. I don't know how to do this very well. You will not hear an excitement about change. You see, education, along with religion and religious organizations, are at the bottom sectors in terms of things, in terms of groups that are most desirous of change. They are risk averse and change averse in those contexts. Yes, I think it's ironic that higher ed is supposed to help students go become employees, and employees need to embrace change, and yet we hate change. Yeah, that's ironic. And it asked me sometime over a drink what it's like to work at a place that's both higher ed and religious. And we can talk about that some other time. But that's probably for another podcast. Today, though, we would like to focus on leadership through the lens of change. What it looks like to talk about disruption. That's the word we used to use in my innovation days. What is it like to lead through disruption? Today's guest knows a little something about that, which is why our title today is The Business of Disruption and the Adversity of Change. So with that, it is my pleasure to introduce today's guest, John Bryant. John is the owner of No Lie Brewhouse in Spokane. He is not only running this internationally recognized and award-winning craft brewery, but has some other specific attributes that we're going to dig into. And I'll let John explain some more, but you should know that No Lie is built on a foundation of people and community, not just around world-class craft beers. No Lie is the number one international award-winning brewery in America since 2020. And I think that's a real testament to John's approach, which you'll hear today, both to beer, but also to leadership and the leadership of people, the leadership of community. John has a 35-year industry track record. He started at the Rainier Brewery in Seattle. He went on to various roles. He was the president of Oscar Blues Brewery, COO of Odell Brewing, the vice president of sales and marketing at Deschutes Brewery, and the national brand manager of Henry Weinhardt. It is really a tremendous pleasure to introduce a local legend here to us in Spokane. John Bryant, welcome to the show.
At Horizon Credit Union, community is who we serve. And helping you grow is our goal. Your path is our purpose. and together we can make a positive impact. Whether you're ready for a checking account, a home loan, or a team that cares about your dreams, doing business here does good in the community. Discover the difference and open your account today or find a branch near you at hzcu.org. Horizon Credit Union is an equal housing opportunity lender insured by NCUA.
John Bryant, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to it.
So, John, look, I just shared your bona fides there that's on the Vita. What else would you love for people to know about you in your own words? And I'd love for them to not only hear a little more about you from your perspective, but also sort of what is your approach to leadership?
Yeah, thanks for having me. You know, the brewery, when we started in 2012 in Spokane, was to do something great here. And, you know, it's kind of like that thing where if somebody else makes you a sandwich, it tastes better. And it always seemed that Spokane, if something was from somewhere else, it had to have been better. And there's a little bit of a whack-a-mole mentality sometimes. And to break through that ceiling, you do have to disrupt. And disrupt doesn't have to create fear or defense or any of that. It just means it's time to change. It's time to evolve and to be different. And to create a brewery in a city that had not really an established craft brewing culture, an employee base, the equipment, or the company since Prohibition, you were literally trying to start from scratch. And I underrated how much that was going to take to not only build a rocket, to get a launch pad, and get the rocket to the pad, and then get it to successfully into orbit. You know, when you go into a category that's established and it's going, the rockets are all over the place.
Right.
But we had to literally assemble that in Spokane. And there were times you question if you can make it. There are times when we're out of money. And you have to find a bedrock that is beyond money. It was actually beyond beer. And I think of those darkest, deepest, hard places at 2 a.m. trying to figure out how we were going to survive. It bred change. Because if I kept doing the same thing, I was going, were going to fail. And for me, in those darkest nights, my grandmother, who had such an influence in my life, you know, grew up, I mean, I had to go, her circumstances during the Dust Bowl and the Depression, was that you had to rely on other people and bring people together if you have a life of scarcity. And I had to reflect on my childhood at a Grange Hall and the fundamental tools she gave us that I didn't even understand were. But everybody in that Grange Hall from that small community came together with something that added value. And so I've always looked for how we put groups of people together that add value. And we can be bigger than we think we are individually.
You know, that's interesting. To a Coloradan, I'm new to Spokane, where these brew pubs they popped up everywhere. There's you know, microbrews everywhere in Denver. It's interesting coming to Spokane where I now see it. And so I wasn't here for the context you just described. So it's really helpful, I think, for our audience to understand that context. So let me start off with the question then that I ask every guest. And I hope that it is a bit of a launch pad for us. In the very first episode, I mentioned that my favorite term associated with leadership is the word intentional. I think you can be successful as a leader without being intentional, but I think it's pretty rare. You can get lucky, but it doesn't happen, you know, often. So I'm curious, with you, as you think now back on your career and a lot of successes you've had, especially now at NOLI with what you've built, what is your favorite term associated with leadership? And why would you say that?
Servant leadership, scarcity, meaning, purpose. Yeah, what is that? I think it comes down to what is that worthwhile goal? What is that? What is that just cause? So for me, and you know, I'm not driven by money at all. What I'm driven by is that influence that we can have to do something bigger that's meaningful. And for me, I've loved beer. That's crazy, since fifth grade. I grew up in rural Olympia towards Hoodsport, and the kids I grew up with, I didn't realize at the time, either worked at the Satsup Nuclear Power Plant in Elma, it never happened, by the way, or the Olympia Brewery in packaging, production, all the roles. And I got to go to a summer picnic, an employee picnic one time in fifth grade. It was on Black Lake, 85 degree day, the wind's blowing right off the water onto the dock. I can picture today the big picnic table, like at national parks. They're like 4 inches deep. They're thick. They're sturdy. Two kegs tapped on it. The old Golden Gate taps with the top on the top and the bottom pours the beer out. And Ole Gold is just flowing. And I can picture the horse trough, the metal trough with ice and Shasta Cola, just grape and root beer and all those standard flavors they had. And then the cut out 50-gallon drum, the metal with the grate on it, the fire cracking through it with the briquettes and the burgers and the hot dogs flipping. And all I remember is all these very hardworking people laughing, smiling, and the kids having fun with their family. And I thought right then and there, I know what I'm going to do with my life.
Yeah,
I'm in the beer industry, and I'm going to duplicate this experience, which is why we are in the entertainment experience, but we're in a soulful experience. Yeah. No one ever see it on a shelf or a tap. I want you to conjure up the best memories of your life that made you feel relaxed, included, and whole. Exuberant. If you're a kid and you get to go to Disneyland for the first time, or Six Flags, or whatever that experience, or your first camping trip, first time you sleep in a tent and you smell the smoke, I want the brand to represent those very visceral, human instinct type things that make you feel like you're part of something bigger than yourself.
Wow. So it's not just Norman Rockwell, which, I mean, you really painted a lovely picture there, very much like a Rockwell portrait, but I have the senses of everything you were saying. I can smell the campfire now from my first camp out. And that's an amazing goal. I love that that's your filter and your focus. Now, you use an interesting framework to get there. And I'd love for you to describe, in fact, you even mentioned it a moment ago, so that the audience who may not be familiar with a Grange Hall, with what that is, they may be unfamiliar with sort of that central hub concept for farmers and ranchers and those sorts of things. So could you describe what a Grange Hall is to folks who maybe haven't experienced, and then tell us why that's your frame or your lens for what you're doing here?
Yeah, as a young kid in Hoodsport or Mossy Rock, which is a timber town, there's a Grange Hall. And a Grange Hall is a place where you have weddings, funerals, graduations, any coming together, potlucks. Because if you don't have a lot and it's, you're in a timber community, then everybody brings something to the table. It's not bartering. It's literally, there's this common place that was built for gathering and celebration, which gave birth to our beer hall here at NOLI, which was also inspired by a Munich, Germany Hofbrauhaus, which is really, the Grange Hall was just borrowed from that in America, in the States, after all the immigrants came in, to America. But for me, the power of that, and to see my grandmother understand how she orchestrated people to come together at that Grange Hall, and to see the laughs and what that brought, or the tears, whatever people were sharing, and where they needed help. You talk about a barn raising or something. This is where people figured out what people needed. I mean, this is... we don't really have those today because not everybody, there's so many different types of services. But, back, there weren't all these government safety nets back in the day. Pre-Roosevelt, there wasn't much. And it grew from there. So my fabric is that NOLI is an extension of a Grange Hall in a relevant way that can reach kids, young adults, 21 plus, that rely on social media, that doesn't always weave us together in a good way because it's not as personal. I want to get to that human contact, that what beer is. It's a social gathering vehicle.
Vehicle, yeah.
Treated responsibly. And that's what I remember as a kid at the Grange Hall. It's what I remember going to the Olympia Brewery picnic. And it's what I remember, we grew up at the base of Olympic Mountains there in Hoodsport. Our vacation was, parents dropped us off and we went into the mountains for a couple of days and we built fires and we figured it out. But I just remember that excitement of not really survival, but the excitement of figuring it, the excitement of bonding with my brother or with some friend, the excitement of being independent and knowing that at 2 a.m. nobody's coming to save us if we're 8 miles in.
Yeah.
You're truly independent.
Yeah.
But you're also truly interdependent.
Yeah. So, John, let me ask you this. That probably was a pretty big disruption for especially your earliest employees, right? You probably got people who had worked at a bar and they knew a bar, but they only knew that context for a bar. So how did you bring to a group of people this new sort of framework for what you were envisioning and get them to help you make it real? How did people operationalize, if you will, the notion of a Grange Hall that isn't a Grange Hall. It's obviously a metaphor for it or an analogy for it. But how did you get people to do that work that maybe hadn't ever experienced that before?
I failed a lot because we have the, you know, like a psychology 101 of projecting ourselves into other people that I think you're like me because those are my life experiences. And you learn quickly that, you know, I was raised very differently. I was like, we laugh that we were raised by a pack of hounds or wolves, you know, and
right.
And that creates a different set of life skills. It just does. And so even though I've been in a number of positions working my way through the industry for 20 some years before starting NOLI, I was always around people who had been in an established brewery or company who already had a skill set that had already been sorted through. And we were beginning the sorting process or developmental process, which then creates culture. And I'd say 8 out of 10 scoffed at it. You say servant leadership, people think cheesy, you know, whatever, insincere. What's that mean?
Right.
You know, it just means, you know, to me, giving more than you take. Conscientiousness. Being there when it's not attractive. You know, giving when nobody sees that you're giving. Taking care of somebody else before yourself. And to create a culture of that, we're just now, I would say, on year 12, have really turned the corner. You know, we have 2 breweries, a 10,000 square foot pub with a big kitchen. So we have a lot of different facets of, you know, a kitchen, which has its own culture, subculture, a front of the house with all the things that go in the restaurant, and then 2 separate brewing facilities that have to work in sync with the teams. And when you go to people typically that are in their mid-20s to mid-30s, you start talking about servant leadership and giving, you know, the eyes can go back. So how do you do it? You just lead by example over and over and over. And the wealth that we could create after we paid our bills, we have amazing benefits for a company our size. If we create some type of wealth on the balance sheet or the P&L after it's all cleaned up and taken care of each month, what do we do with that? Yeah. And I try to coach and show by example that is either going back into the community, it's going back to equipment, it's going back into investments to push forward, or it's going back into people.
Yeah.
And so you literally sacrifice. You have to show the sacrifice.
So I heard loud and clear a very basic sort of leadership principle, which is modeling. I love that. And I will unpack that a little bit when we bring our student in. Before we bring our student in, though, I want to just unpack. There are 4 beliefs, 4 core messages that you all have really come to build to help you make this happen, make this reality. I'd love for our audience to hear about those 4 beliefs and how, again, how you've enacted them, how you've actually made them tangible. So you've got these really clever campaigns that state, we believe in the power of, and then there's these 4 things.
Yeah.
The first one of those, you talk about the belief in unity. So what does that mean to you? And then again, how do you make that tangible to customers, to employees? What does unity look like in practice?
Yeah, I'd say the first thing is when we practice these things, where it takes you and who it connects you.
Hmm.
When you sometimes break out of your comfort zone and you give or you get involved in something, the type of people that can be attracted to you, or you attracted to them, and you're put in the same room. Rick Clark, who's actually a Gonzaga alumnus, and I have become dear friends. That was just done through COVID when he was literally raising money for restaurants. And it's a really quickly a funny story. He was going online each night. He started and just said, hey, I'm going to raise money. He's on Facebook Live at 5 o'clock during COVID each night. His first night, I think he raised $99. And what he was doing is raising the money. Then he would go to a restaurant that they picked, and then they'd go feed the homeless or those on the streets during COVID. Wow. Like, just kept building. And one night he's like, we're going to raise $1,500. And he raised $1,500. He goes, we're going to go to NOLI Brew House, and we're going to buy, you know, all $1,500 of food and then take it to people in need. And I called Rick. I'm like, God, man, I am so honored. And, you know, my wife always says, you know, don't reject the giver, you know, reject the gift, reject the giver. And I'm like, but he's like, no, we're doing you because you guys are really involved. I want to help. And I'm like, we're doing okay, Rick. We're not doing great, but we're doing okay. He's like, we're doing you. And I'm like, tell you what, up the street is Jack and Dan's. They're dear friends. We've had beers during COVID, and we get together, and they're just as or more important than we are. So let's split it. And then all of a sudden, as Rick and I connected, now we got Jack and Dan's involved, and then we're all celebrating together. And those things just manifest.
Yeah.
So guess it goes back to me, to my grandma. I'll reflect a huge amount because she hitchhiked here legitimately at like 17. My grandfather was 18 and they had a 1-year-old in South Dakota during the Dust Bowl. They hitched a ride. They made it to Toledo area. They slept in a tent on a high school football field for a year.
Wow.
And they were so excited because there was subsistence living. They could hunt and fish and have a garden, which is so crazy, the basic necessities.
Yeah.
But I've always thought if that woman with that little education had just the sheer tenacity and spirit that was always positive, that she had a deep faith that the universe moved when you put yourself into it and you actively put yourself in. You can call it God, you can whatever it is. And I have a deep belief too that universe moves if you keep at it. And you just got to keep at it, right? So I have always taken that Grange Hall methodology because as a kid, I took so much from it. I was protected by it. I was fed by it. I was kept safe by it. I got to laugh because of it. I saw that it truly made my grandmother and grandfather and my parents stronger.
Yeah.
There's something here. And it's like that Olympia Brewing picnic. So what manifests, that's one community. It always as one that was one community. Because everything was too damn scarce to have two communities. Two Grange Halls wouldn't work. We're not franchising this, right? It's one. And so one worked, right? Now what come out of that? You have to have hope. If you
Yeah.
don't have hope, you can't have optimism. It's not optional, right? So then you put that into action. And my grandmother had empathy, but she demanded accountability because you can have empathy, but you need accountability to get somewhere. And that's where, we have that whole thing. Don't be afraid of being laughed at. Stand for what you believe in. It's okay, right?
Right.
Because you have to, or that's the disruption. If you're never going to stand up and you are afraid of being laughed at, you will not change much
Yeah.
because you're going to get beaten down. It's how the world works, and
So,
the
John,
power of
you just,
unity, it brings all that together.
yeah, you just alluded to two and three that I was going to get to. So I want to jump to them since you already talked about them.
Sure.
So, you say we believe in unity. Amazing description with Jack and Dance. That's a love better with. Not better than is an
Yes.
amazing message. You then mentioned two of the others that you believe in the power of community, you believe in the power of hope. I'd love to ask two things. One, could you tell that lovely story about your grandmother and putting herself into the universe with with Eleanor Roosevelt? I'd
Yeah.
love for our listeners to hear that. And then second, can you tell us how you create community and hope in a brand new employee? Someone who walks in your door today, 2024, what are you doing to them to get them to embrace the notion of community and the notion of hope?
Well, the first thing, we hired a new person today, and the first thing I'm responsible for and fully responsible for to the best of our ability, especially in today's society, is safety. I will fight like hell to keep you safe. I will do everything here, if it's cameras or metro security or how we put fencing up or hours or the fact we don't serve hard liquor, our clientele. I am not reckless with this business, and I will do everything so when you talk to your parents someday, like, those people kept me safe. And that's the first thing a parent could ask for of their child, their young adult, 21 plus, who works for us. That's a big deal, more than it's ever been. Second thing is you're going to have opportunity to show all the values as an independent person that you are. It's why we hired you in this interview process, was for your heart and your mind. That's it, your heart and your mind. Because all those in play, then we have a staff, we have a brand with very broad shoulders that looks and reflects like our community. That all comes out of the Grange Hall because you could not discriminate. You needed everybody. You can't just say in this Grange Hall, you can't come in and you can, because you needed all the people. And you had to find their asset. You had to find, I noticed that my grandmother, she had to find strengths in people. She had to, right? So when they hitched a ride out here, and God, they're raising my dad and my grandpa had been in the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, as a young lad in South Dakota, and he'd dig a hole and the other guy'd fill it. And they'd split the day because they couldn't do a full wage. So two people had the same job, and that's all real stuff. They got out here and, they're dirt poor, but they had food because they had subsistence living, which is just crazy that they were happy about that. When they made their way to Mossy Rock before it was incorporated, and by the way, it's incorporated in my grandma's living room in this little tiny house that she eventually bought. But they were just out of food. and everybody had shared, and everybody had given, and everybody gave more than they could take. Everybody was out of everything. This is the depression, in the Dust Bowl. And my grandma got mocked for it, but she told a couple of people, "I'm going to send a letter to the warehouse care of Eleanor Roosevelt." She had to scrape up money to get a stamp, I guess, is the joke. Like, they had to get money letter to literally to put this thing in the mail. So they did, and they sent it. And as the story goes, a couple of months later, in come two big trucks with fresh vegetables and fruits and cheese and meat and bread. And I tell you, if that didn't light a torch in people, that a woman with maybe an eighth grade education from South Dakota, with at that time probably a 2-year-old with nothing, could get the ear during the depression of the First Lady of the United States, man, what will? I've always used that when I have that acidic burning stomach feeling at 2 a.m. and things are not going our way. And even I can feel like, man, it's just the chips are not. Why aren't they bouncing our way? And I just remember they just don't sometimes, and you just have to keep going. And that's where having a worthwhile or just goal or worthwhile purpose goes beyond money, because money will not take you in that place, the optimism. It's got to be something bigger. And that goes back to our staff, is I show it by how we invest in our community, in our giving, how we unite, our 25 days of Christmas. We work with 125 nonprofits a year. We select 25, and we literally write the check and hand it to them 25 days in a row. It's a long December for us. On the 25th day, my buddy Rick Clark from Giving Back Spokane, we give him a $10,000 check. And in that, now we have more businesses and more individuals and more companies who want to jump on. So they're matching our giving. And then we include them as part of this 25 days of Christmas. And the 25 days of Christmas comes from an old school little advent calendar as a kid. That was the thing. There's five of us, and we'd wrestle and fight over who got to open the little paper door, because that meant something. Today, kids would probably throw it in the garbage. But that little paper, and not with chocolate in there, just you had to find it, and then you opened it. And what was the, that was stuff that meant something. It was before Happy Meals had toys. That was the sheer surprise and delight that I hope we can bring to NOLI, because it's just something. I don't know if it's spiritual. I'm not sure what it is. It's just in the human fabric DNA. And that's what I want to get to. And that's what makes, I think, a great community brand.
I assume that our listeners are now really honing in on the notion that part of change, and you've been talking throughout about how this has been a disruptor, a change to people's expectations, is controlling the narrative. And you really are telling some amazing stories to keep that narrative going in the direction that you are seeking. And I think that's a testament to you, but also probably why you've been so successful. And so with that notion of controlling the narrative, let's get to the fourth belief. And after this, we'll bring our student in. So you've got unity, you believe in the power of community, you believe in the power of hope. Your last one is, I don't suspect anyone who's already listened so far is going to question that this is true, because you embody it in almost everything that you do and say, but you believe in a fierce pride in where you live, a fierce pride in living here in Spokane. Let me just stick with the theme of making that tangible. Let me ask it to you this way. If somebody comes to Spokane in the summer on a road trip and they happen into NOLI, how would they see at work your fierce pride in living here?
Yeah, and I'll back up. So I have taken a ton of crap thinking we were going to create world-class beer in Spokane. Do you know people mock me for years on that? But then you have to validate it. How do you validate it? You send it around the world, And we've won 169 medals in 12 years, and we lead North America for the last four in a row, the most medals garnered around the world. Now, it doesn't make us better than anywhere else, because sometimes small brewers can go, "Well, do you think you're better than us?" No. All it means is that I get some really great tasting notes from about 10 different countries and five continents of different cultures, tasting behaviors, and habits to refine our beers. And if I take those beers then to our lab that we pay full time to analyze every single beer we make, and then we do our sensory, I know that we're going to make the beer that we want to make. And that beer doesn't always fit a category to win something, but that's not important. It's not that I'm better than somebody. I want to always make us better and better on what we want to make. And that's what's so important. So you go back 12 years when people were making fun of us, but I could rely on this. What would make Coach Few or Coach Fortier proud to take a recruit from another top university or some really cool city, Austin, to Spokane, and where are they going to go? And what are they going to show the culture of the city to convince that individual and that family that this is the right city? I've always thought that I want to live up to that expectation. I want to live up to what they need to be at the level of both of those programs and the institution at Gonzaga. That was because other than that, nobody gave anybody credit for doing something really amazing.
Right.
And that always drove me. And we're very fortunate that the programs do come here. And I do get to meet parents. I do get to tell them my story. I do get to tell them how their child or their young adult will be nurtured as well. And that's why there's a key reason you go to Gonzaga. It's not the NIL money all the time. It's because you're going to be a successful adult. And when you go into the world, you're going to have more long-term success, be it in the NBA or the WNBA. Razier Bolton is an amazing example 2 years ago who did a philanthropy. He is such an amazing young man. But that came out of a lot of people being with him and beyond his parents, coaching staff, Rick Clark, the friends he hung out at the university, all these influencers. And that man is successful today. And he's playing in Belgium, but he's successful in Belgium doing community work. So that's what gets me excited, that this is more than making beer. But beer is the first reason. It's our reason for existence. Very first one. It doesn't work, and we can't do the other work that ignites the passion at 2 a.m. When you want to quit sometimes, there's days I still go, why are we doing this? And you know what makes it worth it? It's just giving back. Builds your soul.
Yeah.
I don't have a beach house. I don't have a speedboat, right? I got a community. I got 90 people I care about. I got brands that I believe are very strong and represent beer. They represent community. They represent giving. They represent, you know, they represent a campfire, a carnival, whatever that is. And that is, you can't put a price on that.
I can't imagine there isn't anybody right now who isn't Googling where is No Lie if they haven't been there. So
come check out the beer campus. It is, you know, we just got voted number three patio in America. Now, there's a reason for that.
It's awesome, yeah.
There's a reason. The vision for that was because as a young kid next to the Olympic National Park, I wanted that to be this relevant national park that was a beer garden. Then I borrowed from trips to Texas at ice houses that are on walking paths with the lights.
Yep, yep.
And then we just brought this thing to life that is like a Disneyland for adults, craft beer on a river. I mean, it is like, it's surreal.
I got to tell you, the very first event I came to, it was an after hours event that was for, it was a retirement party for someone, was at No Lie. And I was like, wow, if this is what Spokane is, I'm in the right spot. It's a lovely patio. It's a lovely patio. Okay. So we're at the halfway point. Anyone who's listened to any of the podcasts before knows this is when we like to bring in a current student from Gonzaga or students. In this case, we've got a student who is near and dear to my heart for a couple of reasons. So we're about to bring in Yvette Davila Godwin, and she is not only in our master's program, and I'll let her explain a little bit more about that in a moment. She also happens to work out of my office. And so I know Yvette very well. I see her on a regular basis. We have conversations about budgets and personnel and all sorts of very important things. But at this point, I'd love for Yvette to say hi to our audience, and we'd like to welcome you to the show.
Hi, thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you and with John. And I was an undergrad student when No Lie, I think at the time was Northern Lights, right, started up. And so it's just kind of cool to see these last 12 years, the way that it's been shaped and the way that it's impacted our community and all the great work that you've done. So really, thank you for all of that. And thank you, Jeff. Not only do I work here, I'm a twice graduate of Gonzaga. So I got my undergraduate, I got my master's, currently in the doctoral program for leadership studies. So really excited to be here with my student hat instead of a staff hat. So thank you.
Oh, absolutely. I think I just said I think I said you're a master's student. Yeah, I know you're a doctoral student. I didn't mean to demote you like that.
Oh, that's okay.
You worked awfully hard for that degree, so I'm sorry. You got to hear the first part of our conversation, and I know you got to hear the passion that John brings to everything that he's talking about. I'd love to know, how do you tie this back into your own work? Obviously, you now know it from a couple of different lenses with the organization leadership and comm leadership stuff. I know you took classes in both, but now also through the lens of some of the work you're doing in your doctorate. What was going through your mind as you were hearing some of those concepts and terms?
So one of the first classes I took in our program was feminist ethics and leadership. And we talk about like language and what power that comes using the right terminology. And if there is no terminology and creating the terminology to be able to relay our ideas and to change the world, right? And so John, I'm curious, when we do talk about language and tying it in with intentionality, the names of your products are so unique and they're so fun. And so I'm just curious, what is the inspiration behind it? How do those product names impact the relationship with the community?
Yeah, that's a great question. When we originally were going to form the brewery in Spokane, we went for a walk around town, spoke with people, went into Riverfront Park before it was remodeled, Expo, and there was this brass plate on the ground that was a hexagon, and it was a commemorative World's Fair 1974. And I went, that's our logo, that hexagon. As we walked around this area, and again, it hadn't been redone as it is today since 74, there were the gondolas. There was the clock tower, the pavilion, and the Monroe Street Bridge. And in my head, I'm like, well, if we're going to express what the greatest thing to happen in Spokane in a long time, other than probably GU basketball, it's this. And so if we're going to be a brand of the future and changing, and I mean changing how Spokane thinks of itself and get out of the whack-a-mole that, yes, you can be great here. And yes, you can compete on international level here. We're going to have to bring out all the greatness and shine it. And so Expo, the hexagon logo, the icons. And the one thing that kept coming up over and over as I sat in pubs or met with people is I was born and raised here. I was born and raised. I was born, I went through high school, I left, or I left and I came back and raised my family. That word born and raised just kept coming up as an underlying thread of the city. Perfect. That's going to be our first brand. And then the brand names kind of came out of what the culture of the city was, but not limited to what it could be. And so Wrecking Ball Imperial Stout, Wrecking Ball is all about things being dropped to the ground to be rebuilt for better. And that's the symbolism of Wrecking Ball. And they had to do that with the rail yard where the park was. They had to remove that rail yard to get it out of there to get this environmental park put together. So wrecking doesn't necessarily mean destroying. It can mean taking something that's not fruitful anymore and giving it a chance to, seed and grow. And that's how those brands kind of took life, and it's how we've approached the brewery ever since.
So even your names tell a story, which is again controlling that narrative. I love that. So Yvette, I'm curious, what classes are you in right now? What are you taking right now, Yvette?
I'm taking a leadership ruminations course, but it's focused on Indigenous research methodologies.
All right. Okay. So I'm curious, do you have any questions that kind of stem back to that?
Oh, I totally do. One of the best classes I've ever taken,
Nice.
and all the classes that I've ever taken. So, in this course, we talked about the idea of location and how that impacts us and the work that we do, right? So, in this book by Dr. Absalon, the book is called Kendalsawin. Her definition of location is the following: location identifies the lands that raised you and the land your flesh is made from. Location is about space and place. Location anchors responsibility, relevance, and relational accountability. Location speaks to who you are and who you are not. It establishes parameters about what you know and what you do not. Location identifies your gender, orientation, race, class, ethnicity, social position, ability, geography, and nation, and so on and so forth. But I'm just going to stop there. So, my question to you, John, is so understanding this context of where you're coming from and the story that you shared with us. Why is it important for you to have this platform that you have, and why is it important to stay here in Spokane? Also, what kind of legacy are you trying to leave behind for future generations, whether that be your family or future generations here in Spokane?
Okay, there's a lot to unpack there. I do believe there's, am I Cindy, my wife, reminds me all the time, there's a purpose and a reason we've been put back. And not to sound cheesy or corny, but she believes this is destined, like we're supposed to do this. And 25 years prior to this, I mean, we grinded. We moved all over the Western US. We've uprooted our families. We've made sacrifices. like a lot of people have, but mainly the main sacrifice was moving away from my entire family for most of my adult life. That's a sacrifice. And it doesn't make everybody happy in your family. And taking risks, having a great job and leaving it to take a complete risk, put some things in play I thought we could do. And then you practice at the new company, right? And you succeed, you fail, and you learn from it. And the work's done, and I took another bigger opportunity to see if these things I learned in my life could be put into play in this deeper cause, this deeper purpose, which I believe since fifth grade, the proper enjoyment of beer can make a community stronger. Now, it has a responsible, proper, enjoyment of beer for adults can actually be a very social, uniting fabric. It's a coffee house, it's a beer hall, it's a Grange hall, these things that we need human interaction and connection. And the only way in the Grange hall is you have to have everybody's assets, everybody's mind. So it's not ethnicity, religion, skin color, I don't know, whatever can divide people into silos. You need everybody. And in our thing here, I don't go too much into, we don't discriminate because that by our behavior, we demonstrate that. What we talk about is we need hearts and minds. And hearts and minds can be from anybody. And that everybody at NOLAI has a gift. I 100% believe. And everybody here is also here for a reason. And my role is to help get that reasoning out and to show other people that we all can be better together and we can defy the odds of Spokane. There hasn't been a really successful brewery here since Prohibition for a lot of reasons. There's a lot of them. So why us? And it's been harder than I originally anticipated. And I feel like we did build a rocket and we did get the launch pad. We did get all the people to create that. We did figure out the fuel. I do believe we have orbited. We crashed a bunch of rockets, but I do believe we are right there breaking gravity. The bigger responsibility and privilege of that is, what do you do with that ship once you get, into weightlessness? And that's where you need all these people. You need all these different minds, all these different hearts, and you need them to buy into that they're valuable. And I figured that out too. A lot of people come here, they don't feel valuable. They don't feel like they matter. They may not feel like they're safe. They feel disconnected. You can blame it on whatever. I don't care if it's COVID or social media, but they don't feel safe. They don't feel connected. They feel afraid. They feel less than. And my job, damn it, is to say, you know what? That's bullshit. This company's special, you're special, we with a capital W and a capital E are special. Now we gotta go demonstrate that. And that's how we get really good at our craft, our profession, our chosen role in the company. I do expect you to be the best, and I will help you get there, right? We will coach you there as long as you're willing to put the time and the effort in. You will be world class. And when you leave here with a resume from NOLAI, anybody who knows this knows those sons of bitches are demanding. Well, they are because we expect the best of you because we care about you. I care so much about you. I want you to be wealthy and happy, whatever wealth is to you. You're not coming here to just spend time. I won't tolerate it. You can't come here and spend time. You come here and invest time. You come here to give back. You come here to learn. You come here to get back as well. That creates power in a group of people.
Well, I think everyone is experiencing the passion, the zeal that you have for all of this, and how it really does have operational application in every single stream of the business. That I think we've got time for one more question. I want to make sure that you can you. I think you've got at least one more. I want to give you a chance to get that out, and I want to see again how something is applied in terms of change and disruption. It seems like the whole story really has been about that. But Yvette, let me give you one last question before I give both of you sort of a last word.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, then this is a great segue with the way that you responded to that last question. Thank you. So how do you sorry, backing up. So thinking about the community that you're building, right, and uplifting each other, and the idea of that better with instead of better than. And so I'm curious, how do you support the work to uplift people from underrepresented identities and marginalized communities to continue helping the Spokane community? And how does this work affect or uplift your own business?
Cindy, wife, always says it's time and treasure. So if you have time and you don't have monies, that's great. You have a talent, what we all talk about in the brewery. We're very active in seeking out the disenfranchised, mainly in children and families and those underrepresented, the marginalized. I mean, the measurement of NOLI or the measurement of all of us as humans is how we help our most vulnerable. And if we can bring dignity and safety, hope, unity, you know, all those words that we use at NOLI to form our base of a nucleus DNA of our culture, we need to take that into our community. And the place to start are those that don't have much. And so it is very, very important beyond checks that we write, because those checks are only created by the community that supports our product. Period. We don't have them, it doesn't even matter. But then it's how we put it to use. You know, from the first days when we didn't have money, we gave money away. We gave money away we didn't have in the early days. And I fondly look back, because I'd rather be, you know, judged on when you don't have much and you still give it away than when you have much and it doesn't hurt as much, because you don't notice it, you don't miss it, right? And I think when you do that, when it does, when you feel it, it's more personal. And I think, you know, St. Margaret's Shelter, Odyssey Youth Movement, which is an LGBTQ plus for youth, Crosswalk for runaways, Teen Closet, lightly used in new clothing for children and families in our community. And right now, my wife volunteers there. I mean, they're seeing nearly 1,000 people a month because you have so much immigration in Ukraine. Not only our own, say, established population base, but those being coming in from World Relief. Wow. They have nothing, they don't speak English. And then, I mean, I could go on and on, but what you get when you involve yourself, as you know, in these things, is you feel it and you wear it and you absorb it. And for me, it drives me. It drives me. I'm more driven to, well, I don't know if I'm more than 12 years ago, but I'm as much. I have not backed off the pedal because our work is not done. If we can get this spaceship into orbit and we can start directing it, why can't we learn from other mentors who've done a great job in this community? We're not the only one. Believe me, we have our faults. Everybody does. But I believe as we get more and encourage our employee base to get involved in the community, as we get involved in these programs and we feel it and we wear it and we show it to other people, they get involved in this. That's what creates one more uniting community versus more gates, more houses on a hill, or taking my retirement funds and moving to Arizona. I mean, I see that as I get older, that people are taking their chips off the table and leave. It's disastrous for our community. It's time they kept the chips on the table. Maybe they're not working, but maybe you can volunteer. Maybe you can mentor somebody. Don't take your chips off the table and leave. There's one word that kills me, is passive income. And my older son, who understands finances, like, it's not bad, Dad. Like, to me, passive income is entitlement. It's, I'm better than you. I'm taking my wealth and going home. And I know it doesn't necessarily mean, but imagine the opposite. You know, how about active income? How about active, right? How about that? But we can't be passive in this time in our society. We have to be engaged.
Holy cow. That is, I mean, we got to put a couple of these things on shirts, I think, John. you may already have them. We'll see. Our time is almost done, friends. And I can't thank you enough for the amazing interview. This conversation has been fantastic. I hope our listening audience has gotten all sorts of tangible nuggets out of it. But I really do want to give you both one last chance to add any last thoughts, any elements at the end here. I'll start with Yvette. If you want to tie it into something that you're going through in your classes right now, or just something from life, how would you sum today up in just a couple of sentences?
I think it was very inspirational. Thank you for the stories that you share, and very uplifting to hear that community is not dead in such an individualistic society, right? I do think that it takes a whole village to do everything. And so thank you, John, for the work that you're doing. One of my next courses is leadership of resilience. And so I would at some point love to pick your brain about all the resilient obstacles obstacles that you've had to overcome and how that's made you more resilient. And so I truly appreciate this. Some good nuggets here to ruminate over and think about how we can incorporate this into our lives and make a change.
I've got to say, Yvette, it was perfect having you here as a guest. So, John, just so you know, Yvette has actually won awards from Gonzaga for being so community minded.
Right? Oh yeah, I know. Yeah. Oh yeah. Her and her husband are amazing.
Yeah, brilliant. So it was perfect for this setting. So thank you, Yvette. Thanks for coming, John. Last thoughts from you What would you like to just say as you walk out the door here? Again, thanks for being part of the podcast, but what's the last thing you might like to leave folks with?
First, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's a privilege to be here and just to speak, and hopefully we'll get some feedback, right? Because I always learn from the feedback if there is any. I do believe in it, and I've come around this the last couple months, that we all are more alike. We are all less divided than we're told. I think if you put the politicians to the side and the social media to the other side, we are all a lot closer with a lot more common goals, ideologies than we. I just don't, let's stop having everybody tell us how divided we are, and maybe we flip our brain to how united we are and start looking for reasons to come together. There's enough reasons why we don't. But let's actively and intentionally think of the common ways that we are more alike than dislike, and start thinking about more ways why we need to come together and celebrate together.
I really believe that our listening audience may not have even realized just how much this entire conversation was truly about change. Because what you did here was you brought a very different kind of experience to what people probably just typically think of as, oh, that's a bar. And it's not. And as I hope that they've heard, not just from your passion, not just from your frameworks, not just from the messages that you find such inspiration and empower in, but that as you put all that together, you really get a sense that Novi is a different kind of place that is trying to make Spokane a different kind of place. And so I would be remiss without giving you a chance. Anybody who wants to come support you with, if you live in Spokane, if you haven't been to Novi, I'd be a little surprised, but you got to find it and get there. And if you're coming through, because Spokane's a lovely place to visit, especially in the spring and summer and early fall, come by. So where do they go, John?
Oh, you just jump off the Hamilton Street exit, come right down to the beer campus. We have two breweries. We actually operate two breweries in the area. But the beer campus, is inspired by Munich, Germany. It's the hop brow house in the States, the closest beer house in America, probably anywhere. But the patio is epic. It is such a surreal, relaxing, enjoyable.
And it is no, like, yes, no, dash L-I. It's
You got it. No, hyphen. LI Brew House, shortened from Northern Lights, which was a company, a brewery here prior to us.
Oh, so good. Well, with that, we wrap up this seventh episode. So thank you so much to John Bryant. Thanks so much to Yvette Davila Godwin. We are so grateful that you're here. Thank you for the conversation. Thank you to the listening audience. As I always try to end, good luck and good leading.